prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
What's the one thing you do? What's the one thing you're doing right now? Not paying attention to it. And dependably, it keeps doing this without you even thinking about it. Breathing. You know, breathing is probably the most basic of functions of the human body that it does, along with your heartbeat. But your heartbeat, you really can't see. You may be able to feel it. Breathing, you can actually see. It's actually something external. And the breath has appeared to be so important through history. Many people thought the breath was the spirit. When you sneezed, people said, God bless you. You know why they said, God bless you? Because they believed your spirit was trying to escape. It was trying to launch itself out. And this is something we really don't think about at all, breathing. But should we? And has our breathing changed from before we were influenced by our environment and by culture and by religion and by everything, every other human construct you can assemble? Has our breathing changed? We're going to find out today. We're going to talk about this because I think that breathing is very misunderstood. My guest today is Patrick McEwen. He is with the Buteyko. Am I pronouncing that right? Is it Buteyko?
Yeah, Buteyko is good, yeah. It's
perfect. Buteyko Clinic and you're in Dublin, right?
I'm in Galway, so I teach in Dublin, all right. I was there at the weekend, but no, I'm based in Galway. Galway, okay. In Ireland. It's on the west coast, so the next stop is Boston.
Now, that intro, was I overreaching with what I said?
No, I think it's spot on. I think the breath is absolutely vitally important. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. And the breath has been very subject to change. And yet when we change the breath, it can do so much for our health. But the ironic thing is that many people have it wrong. So for the last 15 years, I've been turning upside down the commonly held belief of the importance of taking that deep breath, that one that you hear all the time. So you can literally change, you know, your blood circulation, change the amount of oxygen delivered to the cells, and open up your airways by changing your breathing.
Okay, I have a lot of questions, and then I also have some questions from Ron Penna, who is a friend of the show, a friend of mine, and also made me look at Buteyko again, because we talked about Buteyko quite some time ago with Peter Lakatos, but Peter said, you know, I'm really not the guy to talk to about it. You are. And then I find out, even from Ron Penna, that you're the guy. And, I mean, I want to say something that I did not realize until you had already agreed to be on the show. But when it comes to Buteyko, you are pretty much the foremost thought leader in the category today, right?
I don't know.
Am I patting you on your back too hard? Yeah. You want me to stop?
You know, I'm lucky. I found a job I absolutely love. I was lucky enough to get over to Russia in 2002. I was accredited by Dr. Buteyko himself. And, it's been tremendous, you know, and the applications of it and what can be achieved. And also in working with everyday people and seeing the results that we're achieving with it, I think he was really on the money. He really got it right.
Okay. So I want to dispel something. Well, no, I don't. Let's talk about where Buteyko came from. Talk about Dr. Buteyko. How did he stumble upon this idea that, I mean, I know we didn't use the word hack back then, but our breathing could be hacked.
So in 1946, Dr. Konstantin Buteyko, he commenced his medical training. And it was 6 years later, in 1952, he was sitting at a sick patient's bedside. And he noticed one thing. He noticed that the sicker the patient became, the heavier and the harder they breathed. And he was wondering, was it their sickness that was causing them to breathe more? Or was it their breathing more that was contributing to their sickness? And he had high blood pressure. It was very high at the time. His systolic over his diastolic was 220 over 110. So he started to experiment by really slowing down his breath and minimizing his breathing. That's taking less air into his lungs. And he found that the pains that he was experiencing at that time, they reduced. So then he started experimenting with patients coming in, teaching them to breathe through the nose and to breathe less. That's the only two things about Buteyko. Breathe through your nose and breathe less. And I know it's so counterintuitive because people often hear, you know, take a deep breath or take a big breath, or people believe that the more air you breathe, the more oxygen delivered to the cell. Where in actual fact, the reverse is true. With breathing, less is more.
Now, I want to... Oh, my God. I feel like an ADHD child right now. I'm writing down questions so I don't forget them because this is so exciting to me. You have no idea. So let's start there because we're going to dispel something, but I want to start kind of backwards. So yeah. Carbon dioxide is very misunderstood, is it not?
Yeah, it's totally.
I mean, carbon dioxide is not the opposite of oxygen.
No, well, commonly, you know, most people think that carbon dioxide is a waste gas. In other words, bring in as much oxygen as you can and get rid of that waste gas, carbon dioxide. So when we're talking about breathing, taking rapid breaths, taking more air into the body than what's required, it's problematic. And there's a huge belief that's out there that's endemic, you know, in terms of, in some modalities, encouraging people to take 30 or 40 big breaths over a series of 2 to 3 minutes. Blood vessels constrict when you breathe too much. Timmins and Lee, they wrote a great book back in 1994. It's called Behavioral and Psychological Approaches to Breathing. And they said that the oxygen delivery to the brain can reduce by half, by 50%. Wow. And those individuals are more prone to panic attack and anxiety. Because,
yes,
of course, how breathing affects us is all going to change. It's all depending on genetics.
See, and in the past, those panic attacks and anxiety effects were blamed on carbon dioxide.
Yes, they knew it. They knew it. And that's why they often had people breathe in and out of a brown paper bag, because the purpose was to rebreathe the carbon dioxide,
yes,
back into the lungs to increase it in the blood, because it's carbon dioxide that opens up the blood vessels. So it's a vasodilator. Now, it's not just the brain that gets less blood flow when you breathe hard. Your heart gets less blood flow. So your heart, too, is a muscle. And even though it's responsible for pumping blood throughout the body, your heart needs its own blood supply and oxygen supply. Well, if you breathe hard, there's coronary vasoconstriction. And there's a left shift of the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. But in simple terms, if you breathe hard, less oxygen gets to the heart. And we have to look at this in terms of sports. Athletes who are really pushing themselves and breathing too much during their sport, could it be increasing the risk of cardiac arrest?
But wait a minute. So you take a guy like Usain Bolt. Do you really think he's thinking about his breathing when he's doing that?
No, but he's got pretty good breathing. I wouldn't be too concerned about Usain Bolt. He's been living at altitude. You know, he's going to have functional breathing. You wouldn't achieve what you're achieving.
So would you assume that Usain Bolt, when sitting in a chair mindlessly doing something, his breathing rate is much slower than,
yes,
the average person?
Yeah, he's got light breathing. A good sign of health and fitness is light breathing. If you go for a run with an elite athlete, they will breathe lightly. If they go to sleep, they won't be snoring. Their breathing is going to be light. And conversely, if you're walking down the street and there's some guy and he's overweight and he's really breathless walking, you're going to say at the very least he's unfit. Heavy breathing is not a good sign of health. And look at the people who heavy breathe. You know, they're not fit and they're not healthy.
Okay, but wait a minute. Now, on the other side, to play devil's advocate, medical orthodoxy today talks about shallow breathing, how bad it is. Oh, once you're a shallow breather, you know, your health is... How is shallow breathing any different than breathing less frequently if the net result is the same levels of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the bloodstream?
But it's not. If you breathe shallow, basically, when you look at the human lungs, we sit upright or we stand upright. The greatest concentration of blood is in the lower lobes of the lungs. Now, when you breathe through your nose, you pick up a gas called nitric oxide. You carry this nitric oxide-laden air into the lungs. And nitric oxide brings the blood from the lower lobes of the lungs up to the upper lobe. But also nitric oxide brings the air from the upper part of the lungs down to the lower. So that's called ventilation perfusion. If you breathe through your nose and breathe lightly, and that's all Buteyko said. He said, breathe through your nose, and he said, breathe light. You actually have a deeper breath because nose breathing activates the diaphragm, mouth breathing activates the chest. Now, many people think that the Buteyko method is about shallow breathing. It's not. The Buteyko method is breathe through your nose. And breathing through your nose, you naturally get a deep breath. A deep breath, if you look at the word deep, deep means far from the top. So by using it, by taking a deep breath, you're using your diaphragm, but it's not a big breath. It's all about the quantity. So in actual fact, breathing through your nose increases arterial oxygen uptake by between 10 and 20%. And that gas nitric oxide, it's 1992 was described as a mighty molecule that three researchers who discovered the effect of nitric oxide in the heart, they were awarded the Nobel Prize for Medicine and Physiology. And your nose is a great source of nitric oxide. If you breathe through your nose, nitric oxide is 50 to 200 parts per billion. If you breathe through your mouth, it's 10. And nitric oxide also reverses the buildup of plaque in the arteries, the buildup of cholesterol, and it's a vasodilator. And the drug Viagra is based on nitric oxide. So for any of your male listeners, I'd say start breathing through your nose and do it as soon as you can.
Okay, but just to clarify two things. PDE5 yeah. inhibitors, they produce a certain type of neuronal nitric oxide, which is different than what we're talking about here, which, you know, obviously there's a lot of different
yes.
forms of nitric oxide today. But
yeah.
not getting too far down that rabbit hole, the thing that I'm gonna be honest about something. I remind myself to breathe often because I tend to breathe very infrequently and very shallow. And I keep okay. telling myself, this is not healthy. You've got to breathe deeper. You've got to think about your breathing. And I have actually, I mean, if I don't, if, my breathing is virtually, not noticeable if you're looking at my chest and I'm sitting and listening to you talk. But then every now and then I do this.
Yes.
And I think in the terms of, obstructive sleep apnea,
yeah.
they call that an AHI, right? An apneic hypoxia
apnea,
index
yeah.
or something like that. And that's supposed to be
yeah.
no good. So I noticed that. I thought, man, you know, what's wrong with me? I breathe so little. I breathe so shallow. And then every now and then I feel like I have to take a deep breath and I catch myself and I think, oh, you know, I got to change my breathing. But according to what you've just said, I'm breathing right.
No. The apnea-hypopnea index is a measurement of the number of times that you stop breathing or if there's a reduction of the flow of breathing, and it's measured over an hour. But if you breathe through your mouth, it increases the risk of AHI. It increases the risk of sleep disorders by 2.5-fold.
Yeah, I don't breathe through my mouth. I only breathe through my nose. I have a theory about breathing through my mouth. I really believe that breathing through your mouth can make you more prone to lung cancer, but that's another story.
Do you wake up with a dry mouth or a wet mouth in the morning?
No.
It's moist.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, a sigh every few minutes is enough to maintain chronic hyperventilation. Like when I'm looking at somebody's breathing, I'm looking at the amplitude of the breath. I'm looking at the regularity of the breath. I'm looking at whether it's through the nose or through the mouth. I'm looking at whether it's chest or diaphragmatic. I'm also looking at the natural pause between breath. So we're looking at a number of things. We're not kind of, we pick it up in seconds. So it's not that we're just studying there, staring at somebody's breathing. You just pick it up. A sigh every few minutes is not a great sign, you know, because to me it would indicate that there's a breathing pattern disorder there. So like a lot of people when they say I breathe light or I breathe quietly, there's a measurement that was developed by Dr. Buteyko. It's called a control pause. It's basically take a normal breath into your nose, a normal breath out through your nose, and pinch your nose with your fingers and count in seconds how long you can hold your breath for until you feel the first definite desire to breathe. And when you let go, your breath should be in through the nose and out, but it should be a calm breath. The goal is 40 seconds. If you're less than 20, it's definitely indicative of over-breathing. So the objective is to increase the control pause. And when you increase the control pause, your breathlessness during rest reduces, the sigh reduces, the breathlessness during physical exercise reduces, and breathing is deeper, but it's also lighter during sleep. You have a better night's sleep, and you wake up more alert.
This is so exciting. Folks, what we're talking about here is literally, truly hacking your breathing. But actually, and I want to talk about this when we come back, Patrick. We have to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, what you have done, well, what Dr. Buteyko has done,
mm-hmm.
has allowed us to return to a way of breathing that is probably the way we breathe during periods of early history, like the paleo humans that we always go back
yes.
to and talk about their diet and their lifestyle and the hunter-gatherer, we probably breathe less often as well. I want to talk about that when we come back, okay?
Okay.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing, so our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest high protein potato chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoKana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of KetoKana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the KetoKana banner ad today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advance contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advance. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advance banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. We're talking with Patrick McEwen. His website is butecoclinic.com. Some of the stuff we're talking about on this show should inspire you to learn more. It's inspiring me to want to learn more. ButecoClinic.com is really the one place to go. ButeyKoClinic.com. Check it out. So, Patrick, did Dr. Buteyko realize that this was a more ancestral way of breathing?
We knew that part of his, when he was coming up and with his technique, he did go back to ancient yoga. We definitely knew that he went looking towards the east. And when one goes towards the east and when one looks at how breathing was taught, and I'm not talking about how breathing is taught now, but I'm talking about how breathing was taught maybe 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago or 2,500 years ago. The one word that was always used, that breathing should not be hard and breathing should be subtle. And that's exactly what the Buteyko method is about. Whereas if you go into a modern day yoga studio, individuals, you can hear their breathing during rest, and okay, they're doing their postures, etc. So metabolically, their metabolism will have increased a little bit. But their breath, they often intentionally take more air into their body than what they need. And actually, that's the opposite that would have been enshrined back when yoga was developed. So something has seriously gone wrong. Something has gone astray. And Buteyko did look to the east. And part of what his technique is would have been found on. Now, he also looked at the medical physiology, because the information around at that time, carbon dioxide, the importance of that was known at that time. The Bohr effect was known. And, you know, he realized the effect on the airways and the blood vessels, etc., by breathing too much. And I don't mean acute hyperventilation. Like, if you look at a medical textbook, normal breathing is 4 to 6 liters per minute. That's normal. If somebody was having an asthma attack or a panic attack, they could be breathing 20 liters plus per minute.
Well, what does that come down to, breaths per minute?
Well, you can't really measure volume by measuring rate, because you need to look at the amplitude of each breath.
Mm-hmm.
So, but say typically, if somebody was breathing 20 breaths per minute, and if each breath is the normal correct size, which is half liter, 500 mil, well, that gives you a minute volume of 10 liters of air per minute. That's double the norm. Now, many people during rest will breathe 20 breaths per minute. They'll have a relatively fast respiratory rate. They don't have a natural pause between breaths, and they have a low control pause in what we measure, and their breathing is too much. They're literally depriving themselves of oxygen. And I don't mean just for a minute here and a minute there. No, I'm looking at a person. How are they breathing 24/7? In other words, how is their breathing center in the brain? You know, because as you said, modern living is totally throwing breathing. Stress really affects breathing because, and this is also, you know, in determining what's good breathing, ask how do you breathe when you get stressed? Hmm. You know, people will tell you that they breathe faster,
right.
They breathe using their upper chest, they sigh more, they take more air into their body when they get stressed. They often breathe through the mouth and you can hear it. Well, that's exactly what we want to address. And we do the opposite to that. So instead of breathing faster, we really slow down the breath. Instead of breathing through the mouth, we breathe through the nose. Instead of breathing using the upper chest, we breathe using the diaphragm. But we slow down the breath to the point that you feel air hunger. And air hunger signifies that carbon dioxide is increased in the blood. And within 3 to 4 minutes of slowing down your breathing to the point of air hunger, you'll start to feel warmer and you feel drowsy. Your blood circulation increases and you activate the parasympathetic nervous response in 3 to 4 minutes by changing your breath. And again, people who meditate, they realize that when you do deep meditation, your breath is disappearing down to almost nothing.
You know what? When I meditate, I'm serious about this. I probably breathe a teaspoon of air every, I don't know, 40, 50 seconds. I mean, I don't even breathe when I meditate. It's funny.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's our objective too. And it's without necessarily doing the meditation. Of course, meditation is absolutely brilliant, but we're kind of bypassing all that, looking straight to the breath and deliberately slowing down the breath.
Okay, so
hunger that's the key.
So let's talk about something else, right? I was told by Ron Penna that you're one of the only people in Buteyko that actually uses pulse oximeters to do testing and to evaluate stuff. And
yes,
the theory that Dr. Buteyko had was that blood oxygen levels and tissue oxygen levels can be completely different, and tissue oxygen levels were much more important to health than blood oxygen levels. So, I want to mention a scientist I had on my show many years ago, because I believe he's probably passed on by now. But about 9 years ago, I had Dr. Wynn Wenger on the show because I was doing I wanted to do a show on how to reverse some of the brain shrinking that occurs with aging. We were talking about inversion. And he talked about something called the mammalian breath hold response. That if a mammal feels water on its face and it holds its breath,
yes,
the tissue, every blood vessel, every peripheral blood vessel opens up wide. to scavenge as much oxygen as possible. And this phenomenon happens in the brain too. He said it's one of the greatest things you could do for your brain is to swim underwater from time to time.
Yeah.
The brain becomes like tuberosity. It's just everything opens up because the brain goes, oh my God, we don't know when we're going to get oxygen again. We need to scavenge all the available oxygen possible. This kind of lends itself to this idea of breathing less frequently.
Yeah, he's taking it to another level, but that's very interesting. Now, we look at pulse oximetry. Okay, so one aspect I'm looking at, you know, how is the individual when they're breathing normally? Do they have normal SpO2? In other words, how fully loaded is their red blood cells with oxygen? Now, at a second part of that, as part of the Oxygen Advantage program, we have individuals do breath holding. And the premise of that is to hold your breath on an exhalation to purposely drop the SpO2 to simulate high altitude. Now, your doctor was correct. When you hold your breath, and you're dropping your oxygen saturation, which you can do, many people find it hard to believe that you can actually drop your SpO2 at sea level simply by holding the breath. And the reason being is because you've stopped breathing, but at the same time, your cells continue to extract oxygen from the blood. And because you've stopped breathing, of course, then the SpO2 is going to drop. When you hold your breath, your blood vessels, the peripheral blood vessels shut down. They constrict. So the blood vessels, for instance, in your hands, they're constricting and your hands feel colder. But the blood vessels that are feeding the heart and feeding the brain, they dilate.
Mm-hmm.
So the body is very intelligent. The body is sensing that there's a drop in oxygen, but to counter that, it increases blood flow. So you can significantly increase blood flow to the brain by holding your breath. And you'll feel alert. Now, the other thing about it is it's activating a stress response. It's really, you know, activating that sympathetic nervous system. And that's very good for the immune system, because if you challenge your body and you push your body into a little bit of stress short term, I'm not talking about this long term stress that the body is not able to cope, but I'm talking a short term stress that's challenging for the body. You will improve your immunity and your ability. We have found it over the years that the ability to withstand colds dramatically increases. People who would have been prone to chest infections, once we start getting them breathing through their nose and getting better ventilation perfusion and also doing the breath holding, that they're better able to cope with withstanding chest infections. So I think there's really something in it. Part of throughout our evolution, evolutionary theorists would have said that, you know, some of the unique features of the human being that were got as a result of diving, because we were getting our food on the seafloor. So we dove down to get the food and we'd come back up again. And we did that over generations and generations. And probably it's no coincidence that some of the longest living people on Earth are AMA people. And they dive down looking for pearls and they're diving down into their late 80s. So I think, yeah, I think he was correct.
Okay, so now I'm going to inject a question from Ron Penna. He said, have you noticed that people with lower CPs, controlled pauses, generally have lower SpO2s, pulse oximeter readings, at all times as measured on a pulse oximeter?
We've never quantified it it varies, to be honest with you. You know, I can't say for absolutely for sure. The one thing that I can say about people with low control pauses, that they're not at the peak of their health and they're not feeling that the best. And also, if any of them are coming in with asthma, the lower the control pause, the greater their asthma symptoms. And they're also tired, you know, and more stressed. So, you know, in the theory is that if you breathe through your mouth, your oxygen levels are going to be lower. And if you breathe through your mouth, you're going to naturally have a lower control pause. But it doesn't always stack up. Now, if somebody comes in, if somebody comes in with, say, COPD or emphysema, and they've got a poor gas exchange there, and say they have some bronchoconstriction, that the airways aren't working the way they should do, yeah, their SpO2 will drop. And that would coincide with a low control pause. But you could have somebody else that has normal airway functioning, and they'll have relatively normal SpO2, you know, it'll be between 95 and 99%. So it's not always 100%, but yeah, no, it could apply certainly to some individuals.
You know, just working on your control pauses, I can see why it would lower stress. And I'll tell you why I say that. I remember reading a study last year about people with congestive heart failure. they suffer from great anxiety because the poor things, they're waiting to die. You know what I mean? Let's be honest, right? Any minute, it could be now, okay? And so what they discovered was people with congestive heart failure, when they walked, did cardio, walked on a treadmill, even for just 15 minutes a day,
yeah,
it reduced their anxiety. And a lot of people went, oh, of course they're exercising. That could be part of it. I'm not taking that away. But you know what the other part of it is? It's the angst of knowing or the reduction of angst of knowing I can walk for 15 minutes and not die. Oh, my God. That, you know, those moments of opportunity for the body to go, I can still control my environment. Okay, this is good. Because the flip side is we're out of control and we're dying. So,
sure.
You know, I can see how this thing that most people would look at and think this is so simple to be able to control the pauses in between your breath are like some innocuous thing secondary to what we're discussing. But the reality is just that simple task tells the body, I must have better control than I thought I did.
Sure. Well, you know, like the lower the control pause, the faster and harder you breathe. Stanford researchers in March of this year, if you Google it, slow breathing and pacemaker. And basically, we're all aware of the pacemaker in the heart, but they said that there's a pacemaker in the brain, and that's altered by our breath. If we're stressed, we breathe fast. But if we breathe fast, we get stressed. So people who are naturally breathing that bit faster are in that stress response. They said you slow down your breathing and really slow down your breathing, and it'll activate that relaxation response. Now, that makes total sense, but guess what? People with a high CP naturally are breathing softer and slower all the time. So if you've got a higher CP, then you're going to be in that better mental state as based on, you know, the pacemaker or, you know, it's slow controlled breathing has always been known to dampen the sympathetic response and promote the parasympathetic response. And people who have, you know, chronic heart failure or congestive heart failure, they're often seen to breathe hard as a compensatory mechanism for the condition. But yet, there's a number of studies that are showing that when these individuals start changing their breathing by breathing softly, their symptoms reduce. So it's not just that the condition is feeding into their breathing hard, but their hard breathing could be feeding into their condition.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it's amazing. Like I'm thinking about it, and the breath is the metronome for a lot of different systems in the body. A lot of systems in the body take their cues from breathing. And if you're breathing fast, the body's going, oh crap, something's wrong. We're getting ready to fight or die or something.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to try to give a primer. Obviously, people have to go to your website if they want to be serious about this, and you should be serious about this, because this is one of those things that could actually have an impact on somebody's life. You know, the medical orthodoxy already accepts the Buteyko breathing method as a way to manage asthma. You know what this sounds like to me? I remember when Keto first came out, and it was good for kids with seizures. Then people went, wow, food can actually be like medicine. That's amazing. Well, this tells me that breathing can be like medicine too, because they're already using it with people who have asthma instead of rescue inhalers and all this other stuff. So this is really important, and it can actually help a lot of people out there. The website is ButeykoClinic.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with BodybuildingSupplements.com. BodybuildingSupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Crealkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
Buy Adaptogen N at BodybuildingSupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. BodybuildingSupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at BodybuildingSupplements.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
U.S. Wellness Meats is the leader in home-delivered, high-quality animal protein. Grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, and dairy. Plus, wild-caught seafood, heritage pork, and free-range poultry. Everything delivered right to your door within days of your order. There is no one better to supply you and your family with the highest quality pastured meat product and dairy than U.S. Wellness Meats. Save 15% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the U.S. Wellness Meats banner ad today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenix Prime and then trained, fasted, and remained fasted until my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenix Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenix Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Ketogenix banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenix Prime. I couldn't have done it without.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Few products can boast being considered the food of the gods by the Aztecs, but the ingredients in Bio Superfood have been. Some algae are the most efficient forms of nutrients, proteins, minerals, enzymes, fatty acids, antioxidants, and much more. Bio Superfood is something you have to experience for yourself. That's why, for a limited time, buy any Bio Superfood products and save 15% off your first order. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad to read the research and learn why Bio Superfood is the best supplement in the world you're not already taking.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back.
We're talking with Patrick McEwen. We're talking about the Buteyko breathing method. This is really something that deserves your attention. I know it's important to me. I am absolutely on this. I have strong beliefs about breathing. I've had them for years. Not just the crazy stuff I said before that I believe is going to come out someday. Breathing through the mouth will make you more prone. If other things are in line, breathing through the mouth will make you more prone to developing lung cancer. If you're somebody who suffers from chronic GERD or any of the esophageal leakage syndromes that we have in our society today, you are aspirating inflammatory molecules 24/7 if you breathe through your mouth. Do the math. I'm not a genius. Just pointing out something. Breathing through the nose is the way it's supposed to be done. Because, you know, we know now that there are actually complete nerve bundles that go from the nostrils to the brain that are kind of like your O2 sensor in your car that are always feeding back to the main computer what to expect that's coming in through the nose. This is why I say you got to be really cautious about using nasal sprays, because that stuff goes right to your brain. For those of you who were young in the 60s like I was, that's why cocaine works so well. That's why we snorted meth. We didn't smoke it or take it. No, it goes right to the brain. So, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not condoning drug use. I'm just using some of my history as an example. But anyway, so if I'm on an elevator with you, Patrick, and you take a liking to me, you say, I'm going to give this guy – the deep dive in the next couple minutes on how to get started with this, what would you say to me?
Okay, number one is, if you have your mouth open at night, you're going to wake up tired. So we for about 15 years, ever since I started, you know, 20 years ago, I first started using a paper tape on my lips. And it's made an enormous difference. If you have, you know, a dry mouth, as you were talking about there, inflammation, yes, it is correct. If you breathe through your mouth, literally there's moisture getting sucked out of the upper airways and they become inflamed, they become narrow. That's why, you know, sometimes you wake up and if somebody who's mouth breathing, their throat may feel sore, literally because the upper airways are getting traumatized.
Breathing and through the nose. And you know what? And I talked about this with the Del Musa on my show probably 6 years ago. And I said, you know, I almost think that once you start snoring, it's going to get worse because that skin becomes stretched. Yeah. The musculature becomes worn. And now you've got this big drapey thing in the back of your throat.
Yeah. No, it increases with age. Snoring increases with age and also obstructive sleep apnea, which is worse. And obstructive sleep apnea is influenced by how you breathe. Like I've seen, you know, one paper here that was published in the North of Ireland. Individuals were having 43 events per hour breathing through their mouth and are reduced to 1.5 breathing through the nose. Now,
that's what I had to do. I was diagnosed with a very mild case of obstructive sleep apnea and I noticed it right away. My heart rhythm changed. My energy level changed. So I wear a strap around my head, keeps my jaw closed, and I sleep with this little nose thing. It just goes in my nostrils and it blows 6 millimeters of mercury or 6 millimeters of water pressure. And it just keeps me from snoring because I record myself at night, too. So I know like one night I'll snore for 2 minutes, but it's more like a groan than a snore. So I'm with you on this. I actually exploit that exact thing.
Well, there's products now in the market that are coming from the United States. One is called Lip Seal Tape, and it was invented by a dentist who was seeing his patients coming in with broken teeth as a result of grinding. And he invented this Lip Seal Tape. And also then there's nasal dilators, which open up the nose.
Right.
And based on the Stirling resistor model is that they will actually decrease the negative pressure in the upper airways and should significantly reduce snoring, but also they could significantly reduce obstructive sleep apnea. So if I was to give that elevator pitch, I would really ask people, breathe through your nose and you can decongest it by simply holding the breath. Now, of course, don't hold your breath if you're pregnant or if you have any serious cardiovascular events or serious health issues. But a simple exercise to open up the nose is take a normal breath into your nose, a normal breath out through your nose and pinch your nose and walk around. Walk 15, 20, 30 paces by holding your breath. And after the end of, say, when the air shortage gets pretty strong, let go, breathe through your nose and resume breathing. Wait a minute and do it again. And if you hold your breath 6 times, your nose starts opening up. Not just the upper, not just the nose, but if there's inflammation in the nose, it can travel with people with asthma down into the lungs because the same is a unified airway. And then sleep is affected because if your breathing is off, your sleep is off, and then you're waking up tired. So two things. Open up your nose by holding your breath and practice slowing down your breathing. And I give a TED talk and I demonstrate both of these exercises because, like, I'd love to see the awareness getting out there. You can literally change your body temperature and you can activate the relaxation response by simply slowing down your breathing. And all you do is you focus on your breath, and as you're feeling your breathing, really slow it down to the point that you're reducing your air intake. So make your breath in shorter and have such a gentle, slow, relaxed breath out, and have a shorter breath in, and have a gentle, slow, relaxed breath out, and take 30% less air into your body. You need to feel air hunger. You need to feel air shortage. And the air shortage is telling you that carbon dioxide is increasing in the blood, and it's carbon dioxide that's assisting in the release of oxygen from the red blood cells. You will feel warmer, you will have increased watery saliva in the mouth, and you will feel a bit drowsy. And that's telling you exactly what's happening. Many people talk about breathing, Carl. Many people are talking about it, and yet, do they really understand what's going on behind it? Because the instruction to take the deep breath or the big breath, it's not good.
You know what's really funny? It's the synchronicity sometimes that I see in life. I just wonder if there's something to it or it's just random. But so on the nutritional side of health, we've learned that fasting is good and that, you know, embracing your hunger, because that means that you are someplace where you want to be because your body can actually repair itself, do all these wonderful things, and fasting has become the new mantra. I mean, celebrities are using intermittent fasting today. They don't even know why, but they're just doing it because their trainers are talking. Now we're learning about fasting breathing.
Yes.
Because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about breathing less, slowing it down, less consumption, and being healthier. This is amazing to me.
Yes. Well, it's breathing less because we're trying to counteract the effects of modern living. It's breathing less to bring our breathing down to where it should have been. As you were talking about, you know, 2,000 years ago, how would we have been breathed? We would have been breathing very lightly and in and out through the nose. In actual fact, anthropologists will say that we've only started mouth breathing probably in the last 400 years. And they found it out by looking at the skulls of individuals from upper middle class background who had access to sugar. Because if you mouth breathe, it alters the craniofacial structure. So basically, mouth breathers have longer faces, they've got narrow jaws, they've got overcrowding of teeth, and they've got jaws that are setting on their airways. Now, guess what? 50% of children, studied children, 50% of studied children habitually go around with their mouths open. Their quality of life is going to be reduced. They're increasing the risk of obstructive sleep apnea for their lifelong. There's a relationship with ADHD.
I know. I did that show probably 5 years ago. That if your child snores, it's not cute. They can have, it's been linked to ADHD and problems in school.
Yes. Yeah. Children with excessive sleepiness have 10 times the risk of learning disorders. There's a pediatrician from Chicago, Dr. Kevin Boyd, and he's an anthropologist as well. And he's been looking at skulls and looking at the effect. And the one thing that he will always say is, we have to be teaching our kids and children to breathe through the nose. And the sleep doctor who discovered obstructive sleep apnea and also who developed the apnea hypopnea index, Dr. Christian Guimeneau, in the last 3 years, he's come out and he's written a number of papers talking about the importance of nose breathing in pediatrics. It's vital, not just for children, but for adults as well. And he doesn't just say to breathe through your nose during sleep. It's also vital to breathe through your nose during the day. Now, Dr. Morris Cottle, C-O-T-T-L-E, Cottle, he was a very well-known ENT from the States in the 1960s and 70s, and he said that the nose is responsible for 30 functions in the human body. Well, you know, I spent 20 years with my mouth open. I was going to doctors for asthma. I had obstructive sleep apnea, even though it was undiagnosed. I was falling asleep in school. I was highly stressed, and not one person said to me, Patrick, breathe through your nose. It was never mentioned to me. I even had an operation in 1994 for my nose, and I still went around with my mouth open because post-surgery, I was never encouraged to breathe through the nose. So the operation was wasted, you know, having to go through that trauma. Even children who are having adenoidectomies and tonsillectomies, very few people that I'm aware of are teaching these kids the importance of nose breathing. We have to wake up to this. This isn't just, you know, something that's cute going around with the mouth open.
This is amazing to me because you would think that this would be, you know, like heartbeat. You don't have to tell your heart to beat. You would think that this would come naturally, but it doesn't. I want to take our last commercial break if you'll just endure this. And I want to come back and ask the rest of the questions that Ron Penna has given me because they're all really, really good questions. And they're probably for the more advanced person into Buteyko. But I'm telling you, folks, I'm on this. I hope you're on this too. ButeykoClinic.com is the place to start. And who knows what problems you have right now that will go away once you get your breathing straightened out. We'll be right back.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish.
Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing. So our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. Okay, I have some really good questions from Ron Penna. And it's obvious that he's been a disciple of this. And he's the one who told me, he says, Carl, this is amazing. And Ron doesn't waste time on things that aren't legit. I can tell you that about him. He says, how low do you recommend getting your SpO2, which is your pulse oximeter reading? How low do you recommend getting it while doing reduced breathing exercises?
Okay. Good question. During reduced breathing, when you're just sitting down with your hands, say, in your chest and tummy, and you're softening your breath and slowing it down, you know, the SpO2 will probably drop down to about 93-92%. It won't drop down all that much just doing reduced breathing. If you really want to drop your SpO2, you have to do breath holding. And the best way to do breath holding is do it with physical exercise, because the body is more prepared for air shortage. And with an athlete, if I'm working with them, we'll purposely drop down to about, 85% SpO2, which is fairly severe hypoxia. It will be in around 4,000 to 5,000 meters, which is about 12,000 to maybe 16,000 feet high. So as an elevation, it's pretty high. And that would be intermittent hypoxia training. You're talking about intermittent fasting there. So during reduced breathing, yeah, it will drop. The individual will feel air hunger, but actually fact is the carbon dioxide that's generating the air hunger. And then during breath tolling, we don't recommend going below 80% because individuals will get disoriented. Now, from time to time, we do go below 80%, but we're happy if we get below 90% SpO2 and maintain it between 80 and 90%.
This is his next question. He says, have you truly seen in your students that sleep requirements go down as CP goes up?
Yes, no question. Absolutely.
He says this has been talked about a lot among Buteyko instructors, but I have not experienced it, and my CP has gone from 12 to 50.
Well, the only thing I'd say is, you know, you'll never get anything 100%. But if I was giving a class of 10 people, I would expect as their CP increases that 7 of them will feel far more better sleep. Now, 3, you know, they could have low CPs, but they may already be waking up fairly alert. Mm-hmm. So it's the 7 that have been waking up sluggish, the 7 who've been waking up tired. That's the 7 that we want to change. And, we see it. No, just like, I'd be very comfortable in saying that. Of course, we can never say 100%. But at the same time, if you breathe through your mouth and you breathe hard during sleep, you're not going to have a good night's sleep. I can tell you that. And they've even done studies. I've had, you know, a couple of papers with this. They had 8 or 10 subjects. They had them blocked their noses one night. So that forced them to breathe through the mouth. And then they blocked their mouths another night to force them to breathe through the nose. And the night that they were nose breathing, their sleep was objectively and subjectively improved. And even in one of the individuals, when they had their mouths open, he actually developed obstructive sleep apnea. So yeah, the best way to practice that is get your listeners breathe through your nose during sleep, get your CP up and see the difference to your sleep. But I think it'll have more of an impact on you if you wake up tired.
You know, I just dawned on me that this could be anti-aging too, because if you believe in Dr. Aubrey de Grey's theory of aging, which is mitochondria-driven aging, breathing less creates less free radicals, and reactive oxygen species, wear and tear to the machinery goes down, on and on. So it actually could improve health span and lifespan. Okay, so Ron wants me to talk more with you about athletic performance, because you are one of the few Buteyko masters, if you will. I'm using that term. I know you haven't said that. Who uses a pulse oximeter. Mm-hmm. Have you worked with athletes? And what do you see in athletes who start to use Buteyko?
We can see great changes. I wrote a book called The Oxygen Advantage, and I spent 4 years. That was a departure from Buteyko in some respects, because Buteyko was very much about CO2, and I was, you know, for oxygen, for athletes, I was more looking at the effects of oxygen. What can we do when we drop the SpO2? But a lot of athletes have poor breathing patterns and they breathe hard. And, you know, if you're breathing heavy or breathing harder than what you should be, you're devoting a lot of energy. A lot of your VO2, a lot of your oxygen consumption is just supporting the breathing muscles. And also athletes are prone to fatigue. You know, they're prone to diaphragmatic fatigue. If you're working the breathing muscles too hard, and the diaphragm can be prone to fatigue, and if the diaphragm gets tired, blood is stolen from the legs to feed the diaphragm. So that's one aspect of it. Athletes, you know, they can have pre-match anxiety, and how do they prepare for a game? So 10 to 15 minutes before a game, I have them do strong breath holding, and then I have them do 1 minute of over-breathing to get rid of the acid. So I'm getting the benefits of doing the breath holding to improve their focus and alert. And also when you hold your breath, another response is called, spleen contraction. So your spleen is your blood bank, and it contains 8% of your total red blood cell count. And they're fairly densely packed red blood cells. When you hold your breath, your spleen starts releasing more red blood cells into circulation.
Right.
And the effect lasts for about 3 hours. Now, another thing is when you hold your breath and your kidneys go slightly hypoxic, so there's not enough oxygen, and your liver, to a lesser extent, they'll synthesize the hormone EPO, or erythropoietin.
Right.
So we all know about EPO. But what it does is it stimulates the bone marrow to produce more red blood cells. So you can improve your aerobic capacity by doing breath holding. But if we have an athlete who's doing breath holding for weeks prior to an event, the breath holding is purposely disrupting the blood acid base balance. And it's increasing their acidity in the blood. So if you think about it, I could have an athlete who's sprinting doing a breath holding, and their cells aren't getting enough oxygen, so the hydrogen ion that's coming from the cells doesn't get oxidized. So that forms with pyruvic acid to form lactic acid.
Lactic acid, which actually could be a fuel source for muscle.
Yeah, no, it can. It does cause what's called a right shift of the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. But at the same time, we're increasing carbon dioxide. So during the breath hold, oxygen levels are dropping, but carbon dioxide levels are increasing. And carbon dioxide dissociates into carbonic acid and also into hydrogen ion and bicarbonate. So we've got an increased hydrogen ion coming from the drop of oxygen, but we've an increased hydrogen ion coming from the carbon dioxide increase. So it's what's called a hypoxic hypercapnic response. We're deliberately increasing hydrogen ion, and as a result, then, the body makes adaptation, so it increases its buffering capacity. Mm-hmm. So therefore, when an athlete goes an all-out sprint, they've got improved buffering capacity.
I was just going to say, they probably don't feel the burn as soon.
Exactly. They delay the onset of lactic acid fatigue, and that's another aspect to it. So, you know, I think it's one system that has many applications, and I think it's really unexplored. You know, it hasn't been explored today. Okay, I've done, you know, it's my own piece with it. And I think the hold, and the reason that I looked at sports, I spent 4 years putting the research together, was because, you know, the medical community, to hear is something that's so valuable, this technique. And yet we know that children who are going into, say, hospital, or adults going into hospital with asthma, doctors in the main, even though we've 16 clinical trials for asthma, we've 16 of them, and they've been all very positive, published in reputable, you know, medical journals, and yet it hasn't came down to the whole mainstream. Yes, the British Thoracic Society give it a 1++ rating. GINA, which is the Global Initiative for National Asthma, they give it a B rating. And they're pretty high ratings. So they recognize it, but yet the information isn't
getting
out there.
But you see, this is no different than the ketogenic diet and seizures. So
sure.
A child will have seizures. They'll put them on gabapentin and a bunch of other horrible, horrible drugs that have horrible, horrible side effects and make the kid feel terrible all the time.
Yeah.
And when the parent comes in and says, hey, what about this ketogenic diet? They're like, oh, that's too hard. It's too harsh. It's too hard. It's too rigid. Now it's like, are you S-ing me right now? Like, so you rather give my kid poisonous drugs that carry all these side effects, but not try and tough him out and get him to eat more fat and protein? That's why, thank God for the internet, because patients are better armed today with information about their individual diseases than the doctors they see. And then they hand the doctor, hey, look at all these studies I found on the internet supporting what I'm asking you for. What does the doctor do? He's gonna, oh, okay, we'll try it. It's a wonderful time. I have another question for you from Ron Penna here. He says, do you have any experience with Buteyko and cancer? Are they doing any research in this area? Because obviously oxygen plays a big role in certain cancers. Anything there?
Yes. There's no research on it, none whatsoever. And it's an area that I haven't focused on because we don't want to give false hope to anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody coming in, if they've got cancer, I think it's important that, you know, they can maintain decent enough sleep if they can, that they can, you know, help with relaxation, nose breathing. I think it would be very helpful for improving quality of life, but I couldn't make any claims whatsoever in terms of cancer.
Okay.
I think it's an area worth exploring in the future, but until I see real evidence there, and I spoke with Vladimir Buteyko, who is Dr. Buteyko's son, because there was a question that came up. And I asked him this, and I said, you know, and at the time I knew somebody who was having a brain tumor, and I said, could we apply the Buteyko method to help this individual? And he says, listen, he says, it's some people make progress and some people don't. And, you know, that question, that answer was enough for me that I wasn't going to give anybody any false promises. So I stood down.
Okay. How about any type of dietary templates and or caloric intake macros and so on that affect – that you've observed have an acute or direct effect on controlled pauses?
Fasting is the best. You know, if you fast for a period of time, in actual fact, your controlled pause really does increase. Some foods play havoc. Alcohol plays havoc with breathing.
You know, Patrick, you live in a country where, you know, like the United States, alcohol is a wonderful thing, right? It's the centerpiece of celebration. But every day I ask myself how this government and the medical orthodoxy put out these reckless studies that try to attribute some health benefit from a known neurotoxin is beyond me. It's, you know, I get it. Resveratrol's in red wine, but there's alcohol in red wine. So and based on that, if I put a little vitamin C on a bullet and shoot you with it, can I say, well, but that's good for you. There's vitamin C in it. Of course not, because the collateral damage that the bullet does outweighs the good stuff. There's nothing good about alcohol, folks. And I drink. I want to buzz sometimes. But I don't lie to myself and think it's going to make me live longer or healthier.
Yeah, I know. But sometimes, you know, we're
I know. I know. Look, I'm Italian. I like to drink. I like to drink. I know.
So, but what else improves breathing in terms of, you know, vegetables, fruits, etc.? Like, it's all the same stuff. The more processed the food, the more it's going to screw up breathing. And that's pretty much it. And the rule of thumb that I say to people is if they're asking, you know, how much is processed? Well, if it's advertised, and if it's advertised a lot, because generally the foods that are advertised by, you know, especially commercial adverts, Kellogg's, if I don't want to make a brand name.
No,
or anything,
who cares? We hate them. Okay.
Cocoa Pops or something like that. You'll see they're advertised all over the place. You never see oatmeal being advertised. Well, at least I don't. But yet oatmeal is a great producer of nitric oxide, and oatmeal has all those benefits. It doesn't get advertised, and it's the stuff with the high profit margin that does. So, you know, that's
so basically the cleaner the diet, and this goes for like pro-inflammatory food components. We know grains are pro-inflammatory. We know sugary carbohydrates elicit an immediate inflammatory response in the body. No one's arguing about that. Anything that's going to cause inflammation is probably going to consume a lot more oxygen, and you're going to end up breathing a lot more frequently to feed these thieves, right?
Yeah, and also the immune system is going to be so focused on trying to deal with the inflammation that it mightn't be able to deal with anything else. You know, because the immune system is going to target the most vulnerable aspect or the most vulnerable function. Like, it's going to put all of its energy into what really needs to be dealt with there and then. We see it, and I'm sure you see it with different modalities, that if I work with a child with asthma and I see their asthma is improving, and the next thing is their eczema comes back a little bit. Because during the asthma time, their immune system was focusing on their asthma and their eczema was gone dormant. Whereas when we deal with their asthma and we help them and they're coughing and wheezing and everything is reducing, well, then their eczema comes back a little bit because now the immune system, something that has been dormant.
Yeah,
been
it wants to be busy doing something. It wants to be.
Yeah,
that's the whole premise behind people consuming what do they call them? Parasites. Because it gives the immune system something to be busy with, so it stops doing the autoimmune nonsense. You know about that, right? We did that show years ago.
No, I don't know, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, people are traveling abroad to get these innocuous parasites that don't kill you, because then the immune system becomes preoccupied with the parasite, which it can't kill, so it stops deteriorating the bone, the joints, and rheumatoid arthritis and all these other things, and Lyme disease, and it works. It really works. Immune system is like an old Jewish or an old Italian grandmother. She always wants to be doing something. If there's nothing to do, she's going to find something to do. The immune system wants to be busy. So it's really interesting that you point that out.
You know, Carl, there's another thing that you've just pointed out there. There is a method called the Wim Hof method.
Yes.
And he hyperventilates. It's espousing hyperventilation for 30 breaths over a course of 2 to 3 minutes, but then a long breath hold. And there's a paper written by Cox, K-O-X, and they talk about it, that drugs for autoimmune conditions are basically, the purpose of the drug is to antagonize the immune system so that the immune system will actually help with the condition. But they said the problem with the drugs for these conditions, say rheumatoid arthritis, is that the drugs have serious side effects and they're very costly.
Yeah.
They looked at the effect of hyperventilation and breath holding, and it can antagonize the same response. And they said this is very interesting because here's a means of antagonizing the immune system to get the immune system to focus on something, if it was arthritis. Now, Buteyko said that our overbreathing is contributing to arthritis. Arthritis was one of the conditions, and we haven't looked at it enough. So I can't say, you know, until I have people coming in to me that I work specifically with that complaint, I can't make any promises. But I think it's very interesting. That paper is only out about a year or so. Can we provoke the immune system? to help itself, especially with autoimmune conditions. And I think breath holding, because it's activating that sympathetic response in the short term, provoking the individual. Because I have seen quite a few people coming in with chronic fatigue over the years and fibromyalgia. Now, when they were very severe, I didn't really make that much progress with them because the exercises took too much of a demand and they didn't have the energy. But if they come in with, say, mild to moderate chronic fatigue, we could make great progress. And the exercises that we made the progress with were the difficult ones, the push. Because it's almost as if we're pushing the body, and by pushing the body, by challenging the body through breath holding, that it's provoking the body to help itself.
Okay. Do you have an app or anything? Because I know there's lots of apps nowadays for this. They have apps for meditation. Do you happen to have an app?
Yeah, we do. Buteyko Clinic is the name of the app, and there's videos and different things in it. Yeah.
Okay, great. So people can go there. Let's talk CPAP for a second, right?
Yeah.
So I literally record my sleep with an app that I use. And at 3 a.m. in the morning, I go into my deepest stages of sleep. Like clockwork. I don't snore until then. Obviously, because, and we know that, you know, I'm in this deep state of sleep and everything that is, that requires nerve intervention is, or innervation, I should say, is pretty much kind of let on its own. And so the soft palate in the roof of my mouth collapses down. But thanks to that little nose gizmo I wear, I don't snore. But so could CPAP screw up my goals in Buteyko?
You know, it's one of those things that a lot of people coming into us, when they come into us with obstructive sleep apnea, they've abandoned the CPAP anyway. The compliance rate is low. And if you look at what is snoring, snoring is the exchange of a large volume of air through a narrow space. To snore, you have to breathe hard.
Right.
And what we're saying is change your breathing so that your breathing is less, so that the turbulence of airflow as it comes into the nose is lighter. And also we're saying is decongest your nose by doing simple breath holding. And the more you breathe through your nose during the day, the more your nose starts working for you. The CPAP machine, if it's an automatic titration that the machine adjusts to the volume that you need, it shouldn't be too, you know, disruptive to your breathing.
Mine can do that, but I have it set on a straight 6.5 millimeter of water, just all the time.
So that's to humidify. You know, if you think about what is it?
No, doing? 6.5 millimeters of water is the pressure that it puts out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not a humidifier. You can set it all the way up to 20. That's like for people who have severe obstructive sleep apnea. They'll set it up on 20 millimeters. And it's like sticking your head out of the window of a jet and trying to take a breath. That's what
there's a number of things that are very, very interesting in terms of obstructive sleep apnea and breathing. One is if you sleep on your back, you will double the instance and increase the severity of the apneas. The second thing is what's called loop gain. A loop gain is when the individual stops breathing, and when they resume breathing, they resume with these heavy breaths, which is normal as a compensation. But the heavy breaths get rid of carbon dioxide, so they create hypocapnia. And in doing so, then the brain sends less messages to the respiratory muscles to breathe, and it initiates the next apnea. So there's a feedback mechanism there. So for stability of breathing, we really need to get breathing light, because if you're breathing hard, there's two effects in sleep apnea. One is called the Venturi effect and one is called the Bernoulli principle. Now, hopefully I get the two in the right order. The Venturi effect states that the more narrower the airway, the greater the upper pressure. Now, what is obstructive sleep apnea about? It's when the negative pressure created during during inspiration exceeds the dilating forces of the upper airways to remain open. If you breathe through your nose, the muscles of the throat and the tongue work harder to keep the airways open. If you breathe through the mouth, they're less. If you've got a lot of belly fat, if any of your listeners have belly fat, it reduces diaphragmatic activity and it reduces lung function. And if there's a reduction to lung function, the upper airway muscles don't work as hard as they should do. If you lose 10% body weight, especially if somebody was obese, if they lose 10% body weight, it reduces the apnea hypopnea index by 30%. But really, the Bernoulli principle, and the Bernoulli principle states that the harder you breathe, the greater the negative pressure. So if you were to think of the upper airways as a collapsible paper straw, well, if you suck through that straw with force, you're going to cause the walls of the airways to collapse in on themselves.
Right.
Whereas if you breathe lightly, there's less negative pressure. And it's two things. We want to try and reduce the negative pressure. And you reduce the negative pressure by making your breathing lighter, but you also reduce the negative pressure by opening up the airways.
I love this. Three questions and we're done. Number one,
yeah.
Do you think that there's also a benefit achieved by this slower controlled breathing that actually triggers more efficient utilization of oxygen? Because we know, at least I've observed things that I like to call scarcity syndromes, where when something is not available and you get it, it has more magic than when you get it all the time. Do you think that the body actually goes, we need to become more efficient at how we manage our oxygen because this guy keeps shutting his nose, holding his nose every 10 minutes? Do you think that you become more efficient at managing your oxygen consumption?
Yeah, interesting question. Like the whole premise of where we're coming from is we're looking to reset the breathing center towards a higher set point for carbon dioxide. When you've got a higher set point of carbon dioxide from the breathing point of view, your breathing is going to be lighter because the body isn't continuously breathing hard to try and get rid of it. And then your utilization of oxygen is better based on the Bohr effect, but also on the fact that it's carbon dioxide relaxes smooth muscle that's embedded in the blood vessels. We have 100,000 miles of blood vessels throughout the body, and those blood vessels are influenced by your breathing. And if you breathe too much or if you breathe hard, and by the way, it's not that you're having acute hyperventilation, it's very subtle. You can have an individual who's breathing 2 to 3 times more than what they need, and you wouldn't even notice it. I'll pick up on it, but most people, it will go totally undetected. Their blood vessels are constricting, their airways are constricting, and oxygen release is impeded. So, yeah, I would totally agree with you in terms of optimal oxygen. It's all about breathing lightly, and slow breathing is going to do that.
The tip that you gave for getting rid of a stuffed nose, this is something interesting. So I suffer from seasonal allergies, and when I wake up in the morning and my nose is stuffed,
yes,
I know not to worry about it because when I go to the gym and train, my nose opens up within minutes of training and stays that way for hours afterwards. So the tip that you gave about pinching your nose and walking around and doing that 6 times, would that work before bed at night?
Yeah, it does. And also, if you're breathing lighter, your nose won't get congested as much. Back in 1923, it was noted that breath holding in man causes the nose to be open. And the two things that open up the nose are physical exercise and breath holding. Breath holding has a stronger response, and it's probably based on part CO2, it could be nitric oxide, it could be activation of the sympathetic response. But yes, both physical exercise, and I'd also say to people is, if you're doing physical exercise, breathe through your nose only, because allow your nose to dictate the intensity of your exercise.
Right.
And as your breathing gets better, you'll be able to get faster. So initially, you might feel that you're kind of held back a little bit by breathing through your nose, but the quality of your exercise is better. You get a better ventilation perfusion. You get a better oxygen uptake in the blood. You get a better oxygen delivery to the cells. It's better for your heart. You reduce the risk of overtraining. You know, many theorists, like even Dr. Mercola, who I have to say I'm a fan of his work, he looks at high intensity training, for example, and he switched a lot of his programs over to switching to nose breathing. Danny Dreyer, Chi Running did the same. So a lot of people who were involved in the health and fitness industry, Ben Greenfield talks about it. You know, switching to nose breathing during physical exercise is a huge first step in improved fitness and better health.
I got to be honest with you. I did not know athletes breathe through their mouth. Since I was a young man and I was an avid marathoner, I've always breathed through my nose, and I believe that was the only right way to breathe when you're exercising. I'm shocked to hear that.
You are the absolute exception to the rule.
No, I mean, look, I'm not trying to be a douche here. Like, I'm listening to you say this, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that all these people used to breathe through their mouths when they were
it's
training?
So common. Yeah, it's incredibly common. You know, there's a few elite athletes that do nasal braid. Sonia Ross Richards, you know, if you Google her image, and she's a tremendous athlete, world class athlete, and she can go flat out sprinting with her mouth closed. But you know, during competition, I don't mind how athletes breathe. I want to get their breathing right.
Yeah, you don't want to restrict
before
them.
Competition.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Last thing, people come to your. What's the fastest way for someone who's just wrapping up the show with us to take the next step? Do they go download your app? Do they go to your website? What do they do?
We've got everything. We've got books, DVD sets. We've got two websites, Buteyko Clinic for Health and OxygenAdvantage.com for sports. So it depends what you're looking for. We've got books for sport. I've got 8 books out there, depending on the individual. One is for sleep, for anxiety. I think it's really important if you have children. We have to start teaching our kids to breathe through the noses, you know. You know, we have to recognize the effect that mouth breathing is having. So I've put a lot of information on both websites, and I've put the studies up there. So the stuff that we were talking about, you'll access the studies there. I put, in some instances, the abstracts, but sometimes I've put the full papers there. So
give the two websites one more time in the name of the app, real quick.
Yeah, so it's the app is Buteyko Clinic. The website is ButeykoClinic.com. And for sports, it's OxygenAdvantage.com.
Thank you so very much for being on the show today at the last minute. I really, really appreciate this. This is a fascinating discussion, and I can tell you that I am going to take a deep dive into Buteyko. I'm 59 years old, and I want to keep training. I've injured myself more the past few years than I ever have, and I'm starting to not take my body for granted any longer, and I want to be able to keep training. And I have long thought about breathing, but I just never came up with any crystallized approaches or thoughts or anything. But this really hit home for me. This is a great interview, Patrick. Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot, Carl. It was great.
Okay. Take care.
All the best.
All right, and we'll see you right tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you for listening today.